Live from the launching pad in Sedona, Arizona, this is the Progressive Technology Hour, and I'm your host, Dr. Houdini. I would like to welcome you to a truly unique talk show program that focuses on exotic technologies. What are exotic technologies? Well, this includes such areas as free energy, gravity, anti-gravity control, the study of the nature of time and time travel. We'll explore not only the technology, but also the how-to part of the technology. So let's have some fun today and explore the world of exotic technologies. Folks, my special guest today is John Moore. He's a talk show host, and he's also known as the Liberty Man. And on the first hour of Aurora Light Show, Aurora, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
John was our special guest, and he's our special guest this hour to wrap up part two with John Moore here.
So we suggest about Planet the listeners X. Catch the first hour.
Yes.
And so, because we're not going to be redundant.
Mm-hmm. Well, we left off talking about Harrington and his discovery. Dr. Harrington and his discovery of Planet X.
Yeah, that was fascinating. Well, can we hear some more about that?
Yes.
Well, yes. In the video interview, which is not the highest quality because it's I don't know what they had for an original, but it's clear enough that you can see that Dr. Harrington is a strong, vigorous man in the prime of life. He looks like he'd go out and chop a cord of firewood by hand. Shortly after this interview, where he talked about Wormwood, the 10th planet, and the scientific reality, no scientific speculation, no theory. It was scientific reality, according to Dr. Harrington, supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory. Shortly after this interview, he announced publicly he was going to pack up equipment and go south. And it was either Australia or the Antarctic and get a first-hand look at the 10th planet. Less than 6 months later, Dr. Harrington was dead, allegedly from a fast-acting form of cancer.
Mm. Now, what year did he die?
This would have been about 88, 89, along in there.
So things were really amped up. Here in Sedona, Bill and I were walking down the street one day. You know how they have you go on these tours, these 90-minute tours, and buy into these co-ops, you know, around the world, you know, and vacation co-ops. So this guy was pitching us for a vacation co-op tour. And we said, no, we're not interested, thanks. And he said, well, what do you guys do? So we told him what we do, and he said, well, I got to tell you guys something. He said, I lived over by the Enchantment Resort, and at night, he said, there you'd be a great big truck that would come in and go to this one house, this little house, and unload it all night long. Unload stuff into this little house. And he said,
well, there was a loading dock and an elevator.
Yeah, exactly. The house was like just a place to bring it in. And
a shell.
Just a shell, night after night after night. And he said, then when it stopped, they tore down the house, covered it all up, and there was nothing left.
Well,
so that's just here in Sedona.
There's places like that all over the United States.
Apparently.
You know, there's a little secondary notice with this story, too, and that is another fellow we met at the Sedona Film Festival has a map of the area. And he says where they did this tunneling, okay, and unloaded all this equipment from these trucks.
Uh-huh.
The mountain that they did that under over here was called Secret Mountain, and it's marked right on the maps.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, Dr. Harrington's obituary said the following. And normally, with a professional like that, you would get, his professional credentials and some notes about his family and children he left behind. this obituary said, well, he'd spent years searching for the planet X Wormwood, but he finally gave up as it not being real in his obituary.
Oh, really?
And at the same time, his top research assistant publicly denounced and said that he was no longer going to be searching for the 10th planet either.
Oh, of course not. Not after watching what happened to his compadre.
Yeah, well, most likely Harrington got a secret injection.
So they're, I had a friend who did the Iran-Contra affair and won the Academy Award for the best documentary film showing how they were running cocaine into the United States. And she was dead within a year and a half of cancer.
Oh,
she was a very vital girl.
Oh, yeah.
In her prime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, the cancer, I had a friend who ran the Malibu TV station, and he no longer does, but he said that he would not keep any food in his refrigerator, that he would go every day to the supermarket, pick out what he wanted, eat it, and throw the rest away.
Right.
Because
they have ways of, you know, these black ops people, they can get inside your home and be mm-hmm. gone, and you would never know they were set foot in the premises.
That's right. And now another guy who was doing a video on chemtrails, he was cooking spaghetti sauce one night, slopped a little on the burner, and turned off the stove top, turned off the burner. When it cooled down, lifted it up to clean out the little mess he had made before he continued cooking, and he found this pellet underneath the burner, like a gel pellet, that he theorized that had he continued cooking, would have melted, given off a toxic poisonous gas.
Did he ever have the pellet?
Yeah, you can breathe in cancer, it turns out.
I understand. Did he have the pellet analyzed?
Yes, he did. He found it to be containing some kind of toxic substances that were hard to identify, but with some exotic cocktail.
Yeah. Well, I've worked with these labs in some homicides and things I've worked on, and what they ask the customer bringing in the sample is they want to have some idea from you what it is they're looking for, because there are so many thousands of possibilities.
Exactly. Yeah. So now I was curious, what gives you the chutzpah to broach this subject when so many are cowering in the corner?
Well, you need to read my bio at my website.
Yeah, I see it here. I see that you're a macho guy.
Yeah, I'm a pretty tough guy, and I have no fear. I know what happens to my soul when I die.
Yeah.
And
so you believe in the eternal life theory?
Well, it's not a theory to me.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, it's fact.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 20 years old and during the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, laying on my belly, and my buddies were dying, I kind of promised myself that I was going to live a life to its fullest on one hand and do whatever it took to expose the lies of the Vietnam War to the American public, which until 1975 when the war was over, I spent a big chunk of my life doing that. I have no fear of these people. In fact, during those anti-war days when I was working to expose the lies, there was a period of time when the FBI had me had a moving surveillance on me.
I had the same thing after I threw a party in Detroit.
Right. Well, I followed them. I got behind their car and followed them.
Uh-huh.
I have no fear of these people.
Okay, well,
I really don't.
Yeah.
And if these men read my bio, they'd better take a vacation day rather than come after me.
Well, you know, what's interesting is one time I was being followed one night. I was in Florida, and I was going out to this island there, Siesta Key, off of Sarasota. And, you know, it's such a placid, nice little town, you know, nothing, you know, too rocking and rolling over there as a rule. And so, you know, I'm tooling along. All of a sudden, this car comes up behind me very aggressively and starts tailgating me in this very obnoxious manner. And, you know, it was almost like they were trying to freak me out. And so I said, okay, what's going on here? So I get the telepathic message. I communicate with higher dimensional angels and masters on the higher levels, and I go, what's going on here? And they go, don't worry, they'll be gone in a moment. And with that, I was like 2 miles down the road further.
Right.
They teleported my whole car 2 miles down the road further.
So good for you.
You know, and I was like, well, okay, that was interesting.
I don't have that kind of access.
One time I was in an elevator in Detroit, and the CIA was there and couldn't see me in the elevator. I walked into the elevator, and you know how when you walk into an elevator, everyone shifts,
sure,
kind of like. Okay,
right.
So I walk in. There was no acknowledgement that I walked into the elevator. I thought, this is weird. And there was these three guys there, and they were dressed in very expensive sports clothes. And I said... And then I get the telepathic message, CIA. And I go, oh, that's interesting. So I'm just looking at them, and they're acting like I'm not there. And they're talking about me in front of me. And they're like, and I'm like, wow, this is really weird. Don't they recognize me? I got my hair a little different today, but, you know, I mean, my God, this is bizarre. And so then they go, you got the coffee and donuts set up? Yeah, we got the monitoring equipment set up. Yeah, we got the monitoring equipment set up. Yeah, we're right above them. We're on the floor right above them, they say. And I'm like, and I'm going, what the hell's going on here? So I walk out of the elevator, and I come into the hotel room, and I say to Michael, we had just gotten done doing radio and TV shows and newspapers and lectures, and had 500 people come to our lecture and stuff on human appearing extraterrestrials, the cover-up on it. I come into the hotel room, and I say, Michael, I said, I ran into a CIA person at the post office who was, trailing me. Now there was three guys in the elevator talking about us right in front of me. And I said, what the heck is going on here? So he's like a telepathic communications person, like Edgar Casey, since he's been a little boy. He's been able to go into an altered state and communicate. So he says, well, they're telling me that they want the people upstairs to know who are listening in that if they think that they've got advanced toys, it's nothing compared to what our friends upstairs have. And they suggest they take it easy and not make our lives difficult. And a warning to the wise, they said. And after that, I was completely left alone until New York City. When we were touring New York City, we were leaving there. And anyway, it's a long story. But to let you know, yes, I'm on your page. I understand negative interference.
Well, they're just people. And the majority of them, these guys doing this and women doing this kind of work.
Just trying to make
a
living.
Job. Mm-hmm. And all they're looking forward to the end of their shift and getting a sandwich and a cold beer at the end of their shift.
Well, that's good to know.
They don't give a hoot about what they're doing. It's just a job.
Well, you know, two years ago, I was living in Prescott Valley and just met up with Aurora here. And she set up all her books. She had a huge collection of UFO books set up in my library.
Mm-hmm.
We come back one day from Jerome, and the place was, it was different. You know, it was like somebody went through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back in the where the library was, and I noticed, I said, hey, Rory, did you take out some books here? There's some books missing.
Right.
And she said, no. And so we noticed that a couple of books were misplaced kind of strange-like.
Yeah, they were there was like a book stuck inside another book.
Yeah, one of the...
Jammed into it.
The Adamski saucer.
Like it was a message. It was a message to me.
Yeah, it was a message.
That they were there.
Yes.
Somebody left me a message.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
and
then the book that they chose to leave me the message on was Adamski's book about the human appearing ETs.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've gotten many calls saying, stop talking about the human appearing ETs. Yeah, because they don't want that message out there. About, so you know, I just like they don't want the wormwood message out there.
Mm-hmm.
But
don't
you think this could tie in to the rapture? I mean, you haven't made that statement, but don't you think that it all kind of goes together?
Well, rapture theology
and tribulation.
That's two different things, actually.
Yeah, the tribulation first, and then the rapture, right? Or
right.
Well, you know, these bases, I think, tie in. You know, when I studied the Bible quite a bit about 20 years ago.
Right.
A lot of this Bible prophecy, I was just fascinated with it.
Right.
And, you know, in the book of Revelation, they talk about these two beasts, one that rises out of the sea and is essentially killed off, and then this second beast that comes out of the earth, that rises out of the earth. And to me, the direct analogy, okay, of this beast that rises out of the earth is, of course, out of these underground bases.
Uh-huh.
You know, to have a continuation of government, you know, during this revelation period or this tribulation
right.
period, that this first beast dies, okay, with the presence of Planet X, disrupts the
uh-huh.
system and kills the system off. But then the second beast that rises out of the earth is this...
supports the Antichrist.
And they have this Antichrist behind them.
Well, I can't disagree with that. It's nothing I've dwelled on. I spent a lot of time looking into, but I certainly can't disagree with it, Bill. Mm-hmm. Have either one of you ever heard of the Black Knight satellite?
Let's hear about that. I'm not quite sure what you're referring to.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning. In 1959, Russia sent up the first man-made satellite in modern times, the Sputnik, about the size of a grapefruit. A few months later, we got our first satellite up about the size of a basketball. And during that period of time, optical and visual light spectrum tracking stations were set up, radar tracking stations, optical and radar tracking stations were set up all over the planet to observe these two man-made objects. And what they found was there was already a man-made object up there, not on an equatorial orbit.
Oh, yeah. I heard about
these
that.
There's an archaeologist in Australia New Zealand, named Jonathan Gray. He's the author of several books. One of those books is titled Dead Men's Secrets. On the first page of that book, Dead Men's Secrets, he mentions the Black Knight satellite. Since I first read about that, I've looked into it, and I found that it is real, first of all. It's about 12,000 years old. It's on a polar orbit, not equatorial. It's about 22,000 miles high, just below the Van Allen radiation belt. I know two of its three dimensions, 40 by 70 feet, and I know one of its other nicknames, which is the chirogenic box. Now, that's what I know for a fact. I also know for a fact that every U.S. senator knows about the Black Knight satellite. I've verified that personally. And that many people, many men and women in the various lettered intelligence agencies know about the Black Knight satellite. Obviously and clearly every president and vice president, secretary of state, all those kind of people know about the existence of the Black Knight satellite. Now, that's what I know for a fact. Now I'll give you my speculation. By the late 1960s, we had enough lift capability to get 22,000 miles above the planet Earth. I doubt that we went 250,000 miles to the moon because the evidence shows otherwise. That's a different topic. But it became a matter of highest national security and highest national priority to gain access to the technology inside this box. So sometime around 1969-1970 time frame, they probably got up high enough to get close enough to measure and photograph the docking mechanism, then come back to Earth and fabricate and build a docking mechanism that could link up with the one on the Black Knight satellite. Go back up there, hook up their docking mechanism, get the door open. Aurora, who wants to be the first one through the door?
My monkey.
Maybe, yeah, really. Maybe a TV camera.
My monkey, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
don't know.
A robot camera.
Yeah.
There you go.
But 12,000 years ago fits with a couple other things that I need to mention to you. Now, Aurora, if you were to go to the Saudi Arabian Peninsula Tuesday morning and go to the right part of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, you would find hundreds of acres of green glass covering the desert floor.
Now, I've heard about this. I always thought that was a remnant of a nuclear war.
It is. But the nuclear war happened 12,000 years ago.
That's what I was thinking.
Now, up until August of 1945...
A Lalantian-Lemurian kind of explosive thing.
Yeah. Well, we didn't know until August 1945 how can you get the heat of the sun at the surface of the planet over 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
And in August 1945, we found out. There was another area, that place where the really nice wool comes from, between India and Pakistan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that Kashmir.
Kashmir. That area of Pakistan, that area, if you go there Tuesday morning with the right radiation detection equipment, you can find where a nuclear device was set off there about 12,000 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's what ended a very high civilization. It was a nuclear war. That's what Atlantis and Lemuria revisited by Rudolf Steiner, a famous educator and author and metaphysician. He talks about exactly what you're saying.
Well, the fact that these weapons were exploded and doesn't mean there was nuclear war is evidence that there could have been. It's not evidence that these civilizations went under the ocean, because even nuclear weapons would be hard-pressed to do that. But this would have been about three cycles ago for the 10th planet.
Mm-hmm.
And the 10th planet does have the ability, the power. The word power means ability to do things.
Mm-hmm.
The 10th planet does have the power to affect our planet and to change our planet in such a manner that these ancient civilizations could have slipped beneath the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it could have caused an atmosphere shift, right?
You know, these three things, the green glass in Saudi Arabia, the radiated ground in Kashmir, the Black Knight satellite, which is real, that's all scientific fact. It's not speculation. It's not theory.
Well, what about the radiation in Denver? Denver is one of the most highly radiated places on the planet.
Well, there's
look
a number
up,
of
if
other
you
locations.
Google, if you Google radiation in Denver, you get the stats on it. When I first got off the plane in Denver for the first time with Michael, who is a psychic and channel, he turned green, and he looked like he was going to get ill. I mean, he was so sick. And I said, "What is going on? You're never sick." And he goes, "I don't know. I feel woozy. There's something wrong here." And I started looking at the people, and I have telepathic abilities, third eye opened a lot,
right.
And I could see people's auras were this sickly putrid color, pea green. And I'm like, what is with these people here in Denver? And we'd go to these parties and stuff, and we'd meet all these
right.
people, and they were all glowing this green who lived there a long time. And then
right.
I thought it was something in the water, but then I found out when the internet was developed that it was actually radiation being held in the mountains, in the Granite Mountains.
Right. Right. Well, that doesn't surprise me. You have an ability, Aurora, to do with who you are what it takes machines for the rest of us. Carillion photography can do what you can do without that piece of equipment.
Exactly. Well, you know.
Neat. That's pretty neat.
Healing. You know, these got these healing wands out now. And a lot of new agers have been, you know, people into holistic healing have been buying up these E-Omega wands and all these different wands and stuff. And, you know, I started thinking to myself, because we were bringing them by my house and stuff for me to test.
Right.
And I said, well, I'll just do this with my finger. And then I found I could have the same effect just doing it with my finger. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, I'll just do it with my mind. And then I thought, and then I found I could have the same effect just doing it with my mind. You know?
We're going on some rabbit trails here.
I understand.
Too. Yeah, but John, you know, I thought we'd touch on this satellite, this Black Knight. Was it ever recovered, or was it brought down?
Well, like I started to get into my speculation. It became a matter of highest national priority to get inside there, get their hands on that technology, and start reverse engineering it. Now, I don't know that they've done it, but my belief is that, of course, they've done it. It's been 40 years since we've had the lift capability with these Saturn rockets to get that high up, just below the, and especially since it's below the Van Allen radiation belt. And that's one of the major reasons I don't believe we've gone to the moon in modern times, is because we don't have enough lift capability to build an object that can protect human beings going through the Van Allen radiation belt. It's that the shielding would weigh more than we've got the capability to lift. It's just simple engineering. In fact, Dr. Van Allen was interviewed in 1969 following the first alleged moon landing. A reporter said, "Dr. Van Allen, how did they get through the Van Allen radiation belt?" And he looked back at the reporter and shook his head and he said, "I don't know." But that's a different topic. The Black Knight satellite is real, and I know that every U.S. senator knows about it. I know the various lettered agencies and intelligence agencies know about it. And my belief, Bill, is that, of course, we've got the capability to get that high up and get inside that box and start recovering the technology inside there and reverse engineering it. Of course we have. But there's something else.
What do you think has been the result of that? Would you say that those things have? Can you comment on Area 51? I think is how I want to approach.
Well, my privileged sources tell me the following: following the Roswell crash, there was technology recovered there, and they immediately started reverse engineering it. There were three, I think they were Westinghouse scientists, who took credit for developing the first transistor around 1955.
Yes, I heard that was the gift they got from the Grays.
Well, that was reverse engineered alien technology is what that was.
Really? Have you heard this? That they traded out technology for allowing them to abduct our citizens?
No, I haven't heard that.
Oh, okay.
My information is that the transistor and other similar electronic devices is reverse engineered alien technology recovered from Roswell. But there's something I want to touch on here because we're going to run out of time before we know it. Do you have your internet service open there, Bill? I sent you an email a few minutes ago.
Yes, I do.
There was an attachment. The attachment shows an image generated by the U.S. Navy, and it shows ocean temperatures in the Atlantic Ocean. And it shows where the Gulf Stream has stopped. The Gulf Stream has stopped. As of June 12th, this year, 2010, the Gulf Stream has stopped. We ran across this information, we being myself and Dr. Bill Deagle and another couple of researchers, about 5 weeks ago in the middle of July. Five, 6 weeks ago, we were put in contact with Dr. Zangari, a PhD scientist who works and lives in Italy, who works with other PhD scientists in North America and Europe, studying the Gulf Stream, also known as a loop current, also known as a conveyor, also known as the North Atlantic Thermohaline Conveyor.
Oh, yes. I've heard of this.
Yes. Well, it's a big deal. If you look at a world map, look at England, Ireland, Scotland.
Yes.
On a globe or a world map, and you go due east, a few hundred miles, a couple of thousand miles, and you run into Moscow.
Right.
That's how far, you know, Moscow and London are just about the same distance from the North Pole.
Yes.
Now, the reason England, Ireland, Scotland have always had, at least up till now, especially last winter, very mild winters, is the Gulf Stream.
Exactly.
Warm water. It comes up from the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, goes up the East Coast, gets up around Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, and starts going east by northeast.
Yes, that makes sense. Yes, I've heard that before.
And up until June 12th, that's what it had done for millennium. On June 12th, it stopped. Now, Dr. Zangari has been studying the Gulf Stream for 10-plus years. It's been known for a decade or more that the Gulf Stream was slowing down in mass and velocity. In December 2005, it was publicly announced that the Gulf Stream had lost half of its mass and velocity, and estimates were given by these same scientists who had built computer models, giving the time when they thought it would stop. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt in their minds that it would stop, and the computer models gave dates anywhere from 5 to 20 years in the future. Well, guess what? 5.5 years later, it stopped. June 12th, 2010. Five and a half years.
Just
after
now.
It was given. Yes.
So we're going to see like a severe winter up there?
I think severe is being very polite. The
devastatingly
water pipes in Moscow are probably buried 8 feet deep to keep them from freezing.
Yeah.
The water pipes in London are probably buried 18 inches to no more than 20 or 24 inches.
Right.
They don't need to be buried. Previously, they never need to be buried any deeper.
Right.
Can you imagine tens of millions of people with no water to drink, cook mm-hmm. with, bathe with, or fight fires with?
No.
What an absolute nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd have to abandon. All those living spaces would have to be abandoned. You can't have, in terms of be safe and healthy, and have tens of million people without running water.
Now, somebody told me, a rumor has it, that the Gulf BP event was staged deliberately to throw the public off from the fact that this Gulf Stream flow has stopped. And, you know, it was part of it because they knew it was coming to a halt.
Well, it was an effect.
And so they want to blame it on an environmental mishap
mm-hmm.
rather than the truth.
Well, I've heard that speculation. I've heard a number of speculations about the things behind the British Petroleum spill. I've heard that it was going to happen anyway, or was happening anyway, and they staged an event to make it look like it was a man-made event. I've heard that they staged it to make oil more scarce. The whole peak oil theory, which came out when I was on a speaking tour in the fall of 2004, has been proven to be a complete fraud. There's enough natural gas in Alaska by itself to run every car and truck in the United States for a century. You know, petroleum is the second most plentiful liquid on the planet. Peak oil is an absolute fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to make prices high, you need to artificially create a shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the reason behind it. But one thing we do know, this is something we do know, and there's simple university-level experiments that can prove this. If you take, let's say, you have a tub full of cool, clear water, and you take a container full of warm red-colored water with red dye to make it red, you can make that red water flow through the cool water. And that's what the Gulf Stream does. If you put oil in there, it breaks down the barrier between the red water and the warm water and the cool water and allows them to mix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, prior to the British Petroleum oil spill, the Gulf Stream was very fragile and already at risk of stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a possibility, and of course this is a bit speculation here, there's a possibility that the oil from that spill was just enough to break the camel's back and allow the barrier between the cold water and the warm water to break down and have the Gulf Stream completely stop, which it has in fact done.
Okay, now question.
The image
go ahead. No, you go ahead. Finish first.
Well, the image I sent Bill, which is right there in his inbox, is a U.S. Navy image, not something I created. It's a U.S. Navy image of ocean temperatures. And there should be a bright yellow arrow that I had one of my researchers put there to point to where the Gulf Stream comes to an end a couple hundred miles off the east coast from Cape Hatteras, North Carolina.
So is that going to mean a more severe winter for people on the east coast as well?
Probably somewhat. And there's some speculation, Aurora, about how fast these effects are going to kick in. You know, the first day of winter is December 21st. It'll start getting cool a few weeks before then.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no doubt that somewhere between 120 days and several years into the future, London's going to have the same kind of winter that Moscow does.
Yeah,
will it be this winter? Will it, you know, will it be the following? I can't answer that question.
Right.
I can say with some specificity that yes, it's coming. There's no doubt that harsh, brutal winters that will cause the United Kingdom, the British Isles, to be abandoned, essentially, that's on its way. There's
now,
no doubt about that. Is when.
Okay, so the British Isles, that includes Ireland, Scotland,
England, Scotland are toast.
Okay, and then what about...
Except for those people who can survive those kind of winters.
And then right? What about France?
Well, France is just as far north, and the warming... Here's what I didn't mention. The Gulf Stream warms up the atmosphere 7 miles above the ocean, and it has an impact hundreds of miles inland, warming up France, warming up Portugal. All those countries are really pretty far north.
I see.
And in fact, the Gulf Stream splits. Part of the Gulf Stream goes south towards the coast of France and Portugal. The rest of it goes north and warms up Scandinavia and Iceland. You know, Iceland has a really mild winter compared to how really far north it is.
I see. Now, question, do the governments over there, do you theorize that they're well aware of all these changes you've just spoken
well,
of?
Well, my knowledge, Aurora, is that the British government, the English government, started doing essentially, now they don't have Rocky Mountains there, but they do have some small mountains in the interior of the island, and they started moving their critical infrastructure there at the same time our government did, away from the lower-lying coastal areas.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, the Gulf Stream stopping, the British Isles essentially have to be abandoned, except for maybe a few tens of thousands of people.
Well, we sure could use some... I would like some greater English influence coming into this country. It would be welcome. have a little more civility. I'll tell you, they are very civil people. I have lived amongst them. They are the kindest, most nicest people you can ever live amongst. And anyway.
Well, that would be a positive thing.
Yes,
that
yes.
That would be a good thing.
Yes.
Now, John, why do you think the you know, this Gulf Stream you know, has stopped?
Well, it's not a matter of what I think. I can tell you what I know.
Okay.
I have to use past tense. What made the Gulf Stream work previously, the engine that drove it, was the salinity, the salt content of the ocean. And melting freshwater ice in Greenland in the Antarctic has been diluting and reducing the salinity, reducing the salt content of the ocean. Melting ice at the North Pole hasn't because it's floating seawater.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't change the level of the ocean or the salt content, either one. But the melting ice in Greenland is freshwater, and the melting ice in the Antarctic is freshwater. And that's been reducing the salt content. That's why the mass and velocity of the Gulf Stream has been reduced for 20-something years every year.
That's it. That's fascinating.
It is. It's all science. These PhD scientists, you know, they're very aware of certain things, and then they have to speculate on some other things.
Mm-hmm.
The speculation up until June 12th. Here's what they didn't know: what percentage reduction in the salinity would cause the Gulf Stream to stop? And that's where they built their computer models. That's why their estimates range from 5 to 20 years, because that was guesswork based on estimates, is all that was. But they had it nailed down. It was on the low end. They said 5 to 20 years, and it was 5.5 years.
Hmm.
If it hadn't been for the BP oil spill, they might have got another few years out of it. But it stopped, and I got people asking me, various correspondents, can they get it started again? Will it start again? Well, human beings can't start it or stop it. Well, we did stop it probably with the oil spill, but getting it started again, I think that's beyond anything human beings can do.
I think you're right.
Okay, so we're going to start seeing colder temperatures.
In Great Britain.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, this past winter, the 2009-2010 winter in the United Kingdom, was one of the worst since they've kept records, and that was because of a reduction in the Gulf Stream's mass and velocity. Mm-hmm. Now, this coming winter of 2010, 2011, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That means there's going to be a food scarcity, too.
Everything. Well, you're touching on something very important here, and I didn't give this quotation from Dr. Zangari, which I'm about to give you, a direct quotation from Dr. Zangari. The Gulf Stream is the pacemaker of the climate of the planet.
Oh, my
God. Oh, my God, that's right. Because up until then, I thought, well, East Coast of the United States, you know, United Kingdom, France, I mean, that's not the planet. And if they have a hard time, the rest of us will be okay. But all these loop currents are all connected. The Gulf Stream affects the weather going up 7 miles high. And it's already happening. Look what happened they've been keeping weather records in Moscow for more than 1,000 years.
Okay.
The hottest summer since they've kept records.
Mm-hmm.
We're having in Pakistan? Half the country, or 20, a huge percentage of the country is underwater. China's having the same flooding problems. So we're in some areas getting no precipitation or not enough, others being massively flooded. And we're going to see this as well. We'll see areas that haven't grown wheat, corn, or soybeans in centuries suddenly be able to do so.
Now, I want to ask you, interrupt you there for 1 second. Do you believe in the HAARP theory?
Well, here's what I tell people about HAARP. It's an acronym, High Altitude Auroral Research Project.
Right, exactly.
There's two. Russians have their version, and we have ours. Ours is larger by maybe a factor of 100% larger, excuse me. What that machine is up there in Alaska is the world's largest radio frequency transmitter. It transmits a radio frequency energy, but it's not Goldie Oldies. It's something else.
It's not oldies, but goodies?
No oldies, but goodies. No click and clack. They can bounce this thing off the atmosphere and aim it, just like you can aim a rifle any point on the planet that they want to.
Right.
And they can warm up the atmosphere or allow it to cool down and manipulate weather, maybe even create weather.
Exactly.
However, they can do it to a relatively compact area. When I say relatively compact, maybe an area of 100 by 100 square miles, 100 miles by 100 miles, which would be a 1,000 square miles.
Yeah, I've seen them do a little bigger space than that.
Maybe a little bit bigger. And they can do it for maybe 3 days or so straight out before they have to shut this equipment down and let it cool off.
Really?
They can't. The point being, well, it's just a machine. And anything that, if you've ever been around radio equipment, you turn it on, it gets hot. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Something that big is going to get really hot. Mm-hmm. Point being, Aurora, they cannot affect all the weather on the planet all the time.
Oh, no,
they
of course
can affect,
not.
They can affect a very small portion of the weather some of the time.
Right.
That's what they can do.
Exactly.
And yes, they can do that. Absolutely, they can do that.
I believe in weather wars that our generals have warned us about.
Right. Well, they have, and there's treaties with concerning those and so forth. However, the weather we're looking at is way beyond human capability, way past what humans can do. And every live presentation I do, I can count on that being a question from the audience. What about HAARP, John? And I go through the little dissertation I just went with you, Aurora. Yes, it exists. Yes, it's real. No, they can't affect all the weather all the time. They can affect some of the weather some of the time.
Well, I remember when France was telling us to get out of Afghanistan that they had the worst summer in the recorded history. The heat was unbearable, and thousands of people died.
Right, right, and it was not just France; it was a European thing. You know, France got a really bad. Yeah,
France got.
And I think
hit
that same summer.
Yeah.
Didn't we have hundreds of people dying in Chicago that same summer from the heat?
I don't recall anything competing with that, but you know, to me, it was a little message they gave the French.
Well, perhaps. I can't disagree. I'm not aware of any evidence.
You know, Nick Begich has talked about this quite a bit, and his father died in a mysterious plane crash. He was a public servant, you know, for the people. I think he was a state legislator. And his brother is now moved up into, I think, that position as well. He was a mayor of Anchorage. And he talks a lot about weather modification. And, you know, they can give you a drought. They can give you, you know, a flood. They can give you a hurricane. They can take a hurricane and beef it up and make it a menace and direct it. And
they can move a hurricane around like you and I can move a shopping cart.
They can move a hurricane around, and they can beef it up, and they can look what happened in over there in the islands there, and what's it called? I'm trying to think.
Jamaica?
It wasn't Jamaica. It was that other island.
Haiti?
Haiti, yes. I'm telling you, I looked into Haiti, and I really think that they set us up. And if people want to see how our government's going to behave during any catastrophe, look, for God's sakes, how the people were treated in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. What a nightmare.
Well, it was, on one hand. On the other...
And a nightmare that was deliberately created.
Well, I don't have any evidence of that. They have the capability.
Well, when you lead thousands, 100,000 people into a coliseum, don't you think you should have some water waiting for them there, and some toilet paper?
let's back up a moment here and look at who had resources and who didn't. The mayor of New Orleans had the following: he had depots full of perfectly functional school buses fueled up and ready to go. They could have evacuated all those people prior to the storm getting there.
That's right.
Now, that's not the federal government. FEMA did not have school buses in a depot to evacuate anybody. They couldn't have. Even if they had wanted to, they didn't have the ability to do so. The mayor of New Orleans did. Now, I know why he didn't. Because if he evacuated these people and the storm didn't hit New Orleans, it would have been the end of his political career. That's why he chose not to do it. Now, the governor of Louisiana had authority also under her authority with martial law to seize those school buses. Even if the mayor didn't, she could have seized those school buses and had state troopers fire them up and evacuate the people as well. She chose not to do it. Now, the president under martial law could have seized those school buses as well and evacuated those people, but he didn't. So there were three different entities, all of whom had authority, if they chose to exercise it, and evacuate innocent people. Now, the Superdome was big enough to be seen from space, and every TV network was able to find it, but the federal government couldn't find it for, what, a week?
Yeah, they couldn't find it. They couldn't drop any water.
They couldn't find it.
They couldn't drop
they couldn't
any
find
water.
It to get water.
Oh, right. Walmart. Like, right. Walmart doesn't have enough water for all those people for a week. Come on.
Right. I know. And barricades were set up at checkpoints, refusing to allow food and medical supplies to go in there.
I know.
This was genocide. I was working on getting a contract to protect a hospital down there, Aurora, and I had my team assembled.
Yeah.
I had an aircraft on standby. I had a warehouse right next to the landing strip to ferry in food and medical supplies, take care of my people and the refugees that we'd be dealing with at the hospital.
Yeah.
And we were ready. We had our boots polished, our guns cleaned, our radios, we had fresh batteries, and we were ready to go. We didn't get the contract, and it would have been a good thing for my team and myself, but we didn't get the contract.
We have so much more to talk about. I want to invite you back on again, but I want to let our listeners know that Bill and I are putting together Dr. Houdini, his alter ego here, we're putting together a... you know, if this was a perfect world, Bill would be Dr. Houdini all the time, believe me. but we're putting together a conference, and I'm going to let him tell you about it.
Yeah, well, this is...
an expo
conference. Yeah, it's called I Am Ready Expo. And the listeners out there can go to iamreadyexpo.com to get a few of the details.
we're going to solidify some cities and some locations here shortly, but we'd really love you to come in and be one of the participants there as a speaker and exhibitor and, you know.
Well, I would love to be part of that. I would love to be part of that.
You know, and we're going to put a team together here to hop around the U.S. educating people on what the heck is really going on here, because, you know, really, it's been Disneyland.
Yes, with the news media, you know, it's been Disney release.
I call it News by Disney. I mean, really, it's so pathetic nowadays. You don't.
It is.
Can I ask you, what's your opinion on Alex Jones? Is he one of your boys, or is he one of our boys?
Alex, who is this
guy?
When I had my Saturday show, Alex used to drive around Austin, Texas, and call in as one of my callers. That was 5 years ago. Alex gets
in a
lot
good
of criticism
way.
From...
In a good way or a bad of, way?
Oh, he was always good calls. Yeah.
Okay.
Alex takes a lot of criticism from a lot of areas for various reasons. My opinion of Alex is he's done a lot of good work that's helped wake up a lot of the thousands of people who would not be woke up otherwise.
I think so.
I have told Alex to his face, Alex, you need an editor. When he puts these DVDs together, he doesn't. There's nothing on the cutting room floor if it has Alex's face or voice on it. And that's just a friendly criticism of Alex.
Well, he was probably when he was a child. His mother told him he was special.
Well, he is a special guy, and he has a very important message. His style isn't my style. It's not your style, Aurora. It's not your style, Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, what purpose does it serve to stand in front of the New York Stock Exchange with a bullhorn? Well, come on, you know, that's.
Well, you know, you got to appeal to the 12-year-old mentality that most Americans have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a place for Alex at the table to wake up people who would never, ever be woke up otherwise.
Absolutely. All those hayseeds out there who are, like, raised in, like, a paper bag, and they really don't know what's going on out there in the world. Alex gave them that vantage point to be able to see beyond their nose, you know.
Now, our opposition, the powers that be, the last thing they want is somebody like Alex Jones on the loose.
I know. He is great.
You know, he is not one of them. He is not one of them. I guarantee that.
Okay. All right. So what do you think of Jesse Ventura? He's hot right now.
I think Jesse has a good heart. He is a former Navy SEAL. He's tough. He's a man like myself. He has no fear. I think he's pushing the envelope as far as you can push it and still be at the table at mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on Fox News twice nationwide talking about terrorism, Aurora, and I was working with a female producer up there in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
She talked way too fast. So we did a show about terrorism, and I'd got on the phone with her. We talked about it, another one. We did a second one, and I said to her, let's get more serious. Let's do a show on the feel-good, make-believe security at these airports. She said, okay, John, I'll talk to my boss. I'll get back with you tomorrow. She gets back with me the next day. She says, John, it's too scary. We can't do it. We can't do a show on the feel-good, make-believe security at these airports.
Mm.
I said, okay, have a nice day.
Yeah, I've been refused.
I've been refused
you know, stories, too, that were too much for the controlled media to handle.
Right. What Jesse did is not as thorough or as detailed as what you or I would do, Aurora and Bill, on one hand. On the other, he's pushed the envelope. Now, this man's doing this on mainstream media, you know, regular broadcast television, and he's really pushed the envelope for being in that venue. He really has.
You know what I think? He's great for the people who aren't like Bill and I, who have not read all the, been kept up, you know, to date on what's really going on. I mean, for us, we understand all the stuff that he's putting out already. We've been talking about it for 30 years. So,
exactly.
So, you know, for us, it's just like, thank you, you know, it's the trickle down effect. You know, it's finally gotten into that level of our society.
Well, it has, but the shows he's done have sparked interest among people who previously did not have a clue.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a wonderful thing that he did. Wonderful service.
Absolutely. And that's a great service he's done for all of us, I believe.
Yeah. So what about Ron Paul? I think he's a good guy, too.
Oh, absolutely. He has a heart of gold, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He is. And God bless Ron Paul. If he had the money that Ross Perot had, they probably would have killed him.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael,
the combination of Ross Perot's money and the personality and the so forth of Dr. Paul would have been too much of a threat.
Hey, you know, Vote Scam, the Colliers came out with the book, Vote Scam. I suggest everybody get a copy. James Collier was a guest in my house 20 years ago in Florida. And he told me that, you know, there's no way in hell anybody gets into office unless they want them there.
Not at the level of president and vice president.
He says that, you know, even on local levels even are very controlled. He said those voting machines are, you know, they're just back there flipping ditches. He got them on video doing it in Miami. The legal,
it does happen at the local level, I agree. It doesn't happen at every local level all the time, but it can and does happen at some local levels, I agree.
It does, yes. And you know, and it's on video. He got it on video. He broke into the voting where they were counting the votes in Miami, and he caught the League of Women Voters filling out phony ballots.
Yeah, well, the county next door to my county, three election cycles ago, the votes were being brought back to the county courthouse, and early evening, about 7-8 o'clock, it was already dark. It was that time of year. A county maintenance truck hit the utility pole that provided power to the county courthouse, knocking out the power, and the voting continued in the darkness.
Oh, that's so cool.
Well, John, we're out of time. We're out of time.
Well, let me get my website out.
Yes.
Please.
TheLibertyMan.com. TheLibertyMan.com.
And we're going to have links up on our website here for everybody.
Yes,
and your bio will be up there, and it'll all be in the archives.
And, John, please send me that image again. There was a problem with it.
Well, I will resend it.
Okay, good.
Just in the next 2 minutes here.
All right. We'd love to have you back again. And I feel like you have a lot more to say. And
well, I'm blown away this past hour. It's like, my God.
We're really very impressed by you.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
I appreciate that. I'll get my material packaged up, guys, and get it out to you.
And we'll look forward to having you back.
Yes.
Okay. Sounds like fun.
All right.
Have a safe, fun weekend,
okay,
guys.
Thank you.
You too.
And all you out there, I hope that you'll share with your friends all that you've learned in these last 2 hours and ask them to come to our Vortex Network News archives and get familiar with this material.
Yes. That was John Moore.
He was awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
We wish him the best. We hope he continues on his excellent journey.
Yes. Well, coming up next is Michael Elejon.